Hello and welcome to the Clutch Tennis Podcast. We are joined this week by, I should introduce myself. My name is Charlie. I am the greatest amateur sports pundit in the world, and I am joined by my mediocre co-host, Luke. Hello, Luke. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for that flattering introduction. I am well, thank you. How are you?
I am never better. The dog did a runaway. I caught the dog. And I'm back here to comment on Indian Wells 2023. So we put out a podcast a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. I don't believe. No, it was last week, wasn't it? It was last week. Is that right, Luke?
No, we missed last week. So it was the week before that.
I couldn't even tell you what about. Last week was Nicholas Jarry winning in Santiago. That's all I know. We've taken a little bit of a break for a week. It's been one of those boring periods of the year. I think that kind of gap between kind of Aussie Open and the American hard court swing, kind of the Masters series coming up. And as I say, now we're in one of my favorite events where we have kind of the Indian Wells Masters, and then it's followed up by Miami. So it's a really, really good period for tennis fans all around the world. So we will just quickly recap over how things went the last time we were here. So we'll hand over to Luke for our kind of weekly roundup.
Yeah, so the last one we did covered Rio, Doha and Marseille. I'll start with our tips passes. So I went for Murray plus 2.5 games against Zverev, and Charlie went for the same pick, money line, and they both won. So that takes me to 3-2 for the year and takes Charlie to 1-4 for the year. So well done on your first win, Charlie. In terms of our accumulators, an absolute miracle happened in that they both won. It's sadly, it's rare enough on this podcast that one of them comes in, let alone two. So well done to us there. So mine was a fourfold of Cerundolo, Zapata Morales, Norrie and Lehechka in straights, coming in, giving us 4.82 units. Charlie's was Murray, Norrie and Cerundolo, giving us 3.65 units of profit. We did tweet out a treble for last week for the, I think it was Dubai and Acapulco, which did lose. So that's a minus one. In terms of our outrights, Charlie had Sinner, which was void as he withdrew. He also had Dimitrov. And then I had Cerundolo, Molchan, Jorge Aliassime, and Dimonor, who did not make the final. However, Charlie did have Medvedev to win Doha at 15-8, which gives us 1.875 units profit there. And Charlie did have Cameron Norrie to win Rio. He did, beating Alcaraz in the final. That was at 17-2, so 8.5-1, giving us 6.375 units of profit for that pick.
Once again, Charlie coming in clutch to save the day. That's what.
Yeah, it's a bit of a new trend this, but we'll see if it continues. So overall for that week and including our treble a few days ago, we are up 10.72 units. So a very good week for us.
Yeah, a huge win for us, really, considering it's one of those innocuous weeks where you don't expect to pick up a great deal of profit. I tend to hedge that we're either going to lose between 1.5 and 0 units or gain a very fractional amount. So that's a massive win, really. Now, on to this week. Now, as I said, last week, we can kind of disregard a lot of the events that have kind of just happened these last couple of weeks with regards to form. I think a lot of players are kind of in that weird interim period between slams and masters and not knowing exactly what surface they want to play on, blah, blah, blah. As we head into Indian Wells, fresh event, okay? They've had a few extra days rest heading into the masters whilst they go through the qualifying draw. And Indian Wells is a very, very prestigious, different event. It's in the middle of a desert. It's super hot, super humid. And it's super dry heat even. And it's basically renowned for being extreme winds, extreme temperatures, and also very, very slow for a hard court, Indian Wells. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but I believe it has one of the slowest court base indexes kind of on the tour, if I'm right in saying that, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, my recollection is that Indian Wells is historically pretty slow. So, yeah, and as you say, very, very hot, often very windy. So, yeah, can be challenging.
Yeah, it's been a happy hunting ground for a hard court for somebody like a Nadal in history gone by, where he's I think he was even with a frigging injury, he lost in the final to Taylor Fritz, not last year, the year before, I believe it was, or it might have been last year.
It was last year,
yeah. And yeah, it's just such a good wind player, so good on these slower courts that, yeah, it just feeds right into his hands. But he's not playing, obviously, because he's injured, so irrelevant. But yeah, anyway, so you're going to be looking at those guys who are kind of potentially the more extreme clay courters, the ones who kind of rip the ball, your new style clay courters, who might really feed into these kind of conditions quite well. So don't just look at an event and go, that's a clay quarter versus a hard quarter. The hard quarter will win, because it's not quite the same as your slick, fast acrylic hard courts that you might expect. So just bear that in mind when you look at the odds. Now, I haven't really skimmed through in great detail these round ones. I don't know if there's any particularly that leap off the surface as things you want to discuss, Luke, or if you just want to go straight in and chat about kind of our accumulators and the odds on those.
No, I mean, there aren't really any kind of blockbuster round ones, because all the top 32 seeds get a bye. There's obviously a couple of the top guys not playing, like Nadal and Djokovic. So yeah, nothing that's not in my accumulator I want to discuss, really.
No, not really for me either. The only one that I've got down here, just looking at, well, there's two that I look at and think like, oh, there's a couple big names there. I believe it was Dominic Thiem, previous winner here, obviously, taking on Mannarino. I think that's going to be a very tricky round one for Dominic Thiem, actually. But it could be interesting, and it could be a nice starting point for him to potentially find some form. And also John Isner against Brandon Nakashima. Two Americans, very contrasting styles. One's a retriever and a counterpuncher, and the other's a big server first strike. Two home favourites there. Pretty much dead heat as far as the bookie's concerned. Not really want to discuss much further, I don't think. But they're pretty much the only two matches that I look at and think, like, big names, kind of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I think in the Team Mannarino, the conditions definitely suit Thiem. Mannarino loves the quicker stuff, like the grass and the Australian swing, events like that. But Thiem's had a bit of a rough on this golden swing. Played all right against Molchan in, what event was it? Buenos Aires, I think. But I don't think he's got a win since. And he's kind of said that he's kind of been struggling a bit with kind of what he wants to do on the court and stuff like that. So I think he's a bit low on confidence at the moment. I mean,
yeah, like I think you're absolutely right there in saying that, like, the conditions feed more so into Thiem's hands. Definitely. I mean, he's won here before. Yeah, I think what I'm trying to say is that Mannarino is going to be someone who he's going to have to play in against. Like, he's had a stinker run, like you say. And Mannarino, even on these slower courts, he's still not going to give you errors. Like, you're going to have to hit through him. So it's not going to be a pushover for Thiem, but it might be a nice way for him to play into the event if he can get around that sort of trickier round.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But yeah, a little bit worrying as a Thiem fan at the moment, but hopefully he can find some form. And then for the other match, I mean, it's just so hard to analyse an Isner match, because it usually comes down to a couple of points here and there. I mean, Nakashima's, you'd think, is solid enough behind serve to not concede too many opportunities, but I mean, Isner can just, he can give no opportunities to break to even the best returners, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a betting match anyway. It's just, I suppose, as I say, two names that might interest people, I guess. And as for Thiem, he's cooked, man. He's not coming back to the top flight of tennis ever again, I don't think. But I hope he does, because I do like him. All right, well, we'll kick on with our accumulators. and our tips and passes. I'll let you start this week, Luke. Why not? You fire away.
Okay. I'll start. I've got the best player in the world at the moment, Andy Murray, to beat Thomas Martin Echeverry at 3-10. I mean, just an incredible week for Murray and Doha. Just kept getting out of jail in every match he played, I think. Saved match points against Sanego and Lehechka. Had a good three-set win against Zverev as well, who actually looks to be playing some good stuff again. Looks like he's got his confidence back. So that was a good win. And only lost 4-4 to Medvedev in the final, who's arguably the best player in the world right now. Aussie Open, he looked great as well. I think we've kind of talked about, well, I think a bit on this podcast and in our group chat about how good Murray's looked this year. I really think he's shown that he can challenge the top players in the best of three format. Echeverry is also playing quite well at the moment, made his first career final last week in Santiago. But he is a clay courter with not that much hard court experience. He does have a very big forehand that could hurt Murray, but I just think it would be a bit too smart for someone like Echeverry, even on these slow hard courts, which might lend itself to Echeverry a bit more. I think the backhand's where he's going to look to dominate his cross-court backhand exchanges. I've got Ben Shelton to beat Fabio Fognini at 1-4. I'm a very big Fognini fan. When he's on, he's absolutely majestic. But I had a think last night when I was preparing this about when was the last decent hardcourt win Fognini had. I remember him beating Demon Orr at the Aussie Open in 2 years ago, and I looked at his results and he really hasn't had one since. He's struggled to get good wins even on clay. I just don't think he's that great on a hardcourt anymore. Shelton's obviously had a rapid rise of course at the Aussie Open. He hasn't won a match since then, which is a bit concerning. But his losses were 4-4 against Giron and then losing to Runa in 3 last week in Acapulco. And he has the serve and the forehand, even on these slow conditions, to kind of take the match away from Fognini, I think. Next, I've got Yuri Lehechka to beat Arthur Rinderknecht at 1-3. I spoke on the last podcast about how good Lehechka has been this year, and he had another great week in Doha, making the semis, had a great win against Rublev. Should have beaten Murray, really. He played well. It's just Murray kind of got out of jail again. I don't know how he kept doing it. Rinderknecht, on the other hand, has struggled a bit this year. Just 2 wins at ATP level. One of those was against Nardi, I think, who's at 120 in the world. And I much prefer Rinderknecht on quicker surfaces anyway. I think with his kind of serve and first strike game style, I think the quicker stuff definitely suits him. But I think Lehechka's much more adaptable to the slow conditions. He's had decent results on the clay in the past. The way Lehechka's been, he's been playing like a top 10 player this year, honestly, from what I've seen. And I don't think the odds on Lehechka matches like this will be as generous as 1-3 for much longer. Our next match, I've got Thiago Monteiro to beat Guido Paya at 4-9. Paya's returning to the tour after a year-long injury layoff. He's only played 5 matches since then, and 4 of them he's lost in straights. He did win one against Vavasori, I think, but other losses were against kind of, you know, top 100 caliber opponents, and he didn't even win a set. Monteiro, much more of a clay courter, but he is a competent hardcourt player, and these slow conditions mean that he won't, you know, it's not too dissimilar to a clay court. He played all right in the Golden Swing from what I've seen. Won quite a high quality match, I think, against Dominic Thiem in a third set tiebreak. Pushed Cam Norrie close in the next round. Had wins against Ramos Manolas and Cecchinato last week. And this match will just come down to the fact that Montero is much more match fit at the moment and he's more used to winning. Obviously, if Guido Pea, you know, a few years ago, he was a kind of top 20 player. But it doesn't seem like he's shown that level since his injury. And I think these odds are quite generous on Montero.
Guido Pea is fat now. I don't know if you've seen any pictures. He's overweight.
Honestly. Well, there you go. That's even more reason to get on Thiago Montero. And actually, I'll just say that that's my tip to pass Montero minus 3.5 games against...
one of the last pictures I saw of Guido Pea was a mugshot of him on a night out with Hugo Delian. An interesting picture that I saw. So
I saw that as well, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. Was that recent? I feel like that might have been an old picture.
I think it was relatively recent. I'm not sure. Anyway, but yeah, it's kind of irrelevant. But yeah, no, I like those picks. I think that makes sense. And sorry, what was your tips pass again?
So my tips pass was Montero minus 3.5 games against Payer. One more pick as well.
All right, yeah, carry on.
I was just saying. So four legs so far. My final leg is Lorenzo Sonego to beat Jason Kubler at 1-2.
Yeah, and you had to go and ruin it, didn't you?
I would not take this match on a quick hard court, but I just don't think these conditions are going to suit Kubler very much. He's only played here once before as well and lost love and three to Caruso in qualies. Alarmingly, Sonego's also never won a match here, losing to Anderson and Bonzi. But the conditions suit him far more than Kubler. He's a good mover and he's powerful off both sides. The slow conditions means he's going to have more time, which he will like. And he's powerful to hit through anyone on any surface, really. And for what I've seen so far this year, he's looked pretty good. Beat Ozzy Aliassime in Dubai. Looking through his results, he's generally beaten everyone that I've expected to this year, which is promising as he can lose to anyone, which makes this pick a bit risky and is probably why you don't like it.
It's risky because Sonego has candy floss for a brain. It's often windy in Indian Wells, and Sonego's one of the worst wind players I've ever seen. And you're picking on him to beat a slam winner.
That is true, but that was in Australia. We're in the desert now. But anyway, I think 1-2 is a good enough price for me there. So that fivefold. So we have Murray to beat Echeverry, 3-10. Shelton to beat Fognini, 1-4. Lehechka to beat Rindanech, 1-3. Montero to beat Payer, 4-9. And Sonego to beat Kubler, 1-2. That fivefold comes in at 3.69-1.
Yeah, I like that. I hadn't actually seen the Montero pick before you went ahead and kind of outlined everything. And I've already voiced my opinions on Sonego, but the rest I like. I haven't picked Shelton either, but I do like that, and I considered that one too.
Nice. And yeah, my tips pass once again is Montero minus 3.5 games against Payer. I think that is dead on even.
Yeah, sweet as. So I'm just going to breeze through mine. I've got a fourfold. It's not massively exciting. I've got Jiří Lehečka to beat Rindanecha, 1-3. Same reasoning as you, really. I think both of them play first strike brand of tennis, actually. Big serve, big first forehand. I just think that Lehečka is a better athlete than Rindanecha. In better form. And 1-3 is a generous price, I think, there. I actually do think that's one of the picks of the round. I've got Taro Daniel to beat Roberto Carbajas Baena at 2-5. Now, Carbajas Baena is a slow clay court grinder. He's not the kind of clay court grinder who hits through the court, unlike a lot of these new generation clay players. He is going to get hurt by the new aggressive brand of tennis that Taro Daniel has brought to the tour. Now, Taro Daniel has picked up some very good wins in the last 12 months, and none more impressively than, I believe it was in Doha, actually, where he picked up his, was it his first top 10 or top 5 win? I can't really remember who he beat, but he beat somebody very highly ranked.
He beat Casper Ruud, but do take that with a pinch of salt, as apparently Ruud was awful that week. It was in Acapulco.
Acapulco, yeah. But I mean it's a very similar court speed.
He almost lost to Andreozzi.
Yeah, I just think Taro Daniel is too much for Carbajal's Benio in these conditions. I think that his serve is bigger than his. I think his ground strokes have more pace on them. And I think he's equally as good as an athlete as Carbajal's Benio. So I just think he's got everything. I think 2-5 is a crazy good price on that. And I think they've given him that price just based on the fact that both of them are relative challenger players and that the average punter is not going to know that much about them. That's the only thing I can think of as to why the price is so generous there. I really don't give Carbajal's Benio any chance there. I've got Jack Draper to beat Leonardo Riedi. Both of these guys are very young, exciting prospects on the tour. Jack Draper's just got far, far more firepower than Riedi does. Both of them do play well behind their first serve. But 8-15 here is a very good price. I think there's been something wrong with Draper recently. Is he injured or something again? I'm not 100% sure.
I don't believe he's played since the Aussie Open. He's withdrawn from a couple of events, which made me want to swerve this one.
Yeah, I think that's probably why the price is so generous. But if he's fit and plays, I think he wins this comfortably. He's got far more oomph behind his shots than Reedy does, or Riedi, however you pronounce it. And I think he's going to kill the Swiss player. He's the far more talented of these two youngsters. And then my final leg is Andy Murray to beat Echeverry. So another one that we have in similar here. 3-10 I've got him at. I think you had him at 1-3.
No,
3-10. He's going to win this match. Like, Echeverry has that kind of new style clay court forehand, granted, very dangerous on this surface. Murray has unbelievable retrieval skills and incredible court craft to finish points even on a slow surface, a bit like Nadal. So it plays right into Murray's hands here, I think. And I think if Murray produces anything like what he's produced since the beginning of 2023, he runs away with this something like 3-3, 2-3, something like that. It should be a comfortable first round win. We know with Murray, it's never routine. He will probably lose a set somehow, but he should be winning this. And that therefore means that my fourfold is Lehechka, 1-3, Taro Daniel, 2-5, Jack Draper, 8-15, and Andy Murray, 3-10. And the whole thing comes to 2.72-1. Not massively exciting, not going to blow you away, but hopefully it will come in with the win again. I'm going to go for my tips pass to be the Taro Daniel handicap, which I'm just looking at now, and it's -3.5. I think he wins that match in straights, and I think that's a good enough handicap to make that, a justifiable pick there. Now I'm just going to keep on rolling straight through, unless you have any comments about that accumulator, Luke.
I did quite like the Daniel pick. I didn't see it until a few minutes before the podcast and couldn't really be bothered to change it. But I do like that pick. A few concerns about Draper given his injuries. I also, to be honest, don't know too much about Riedi other than that he's quite promising youngster. So that's what made me swerve that. But if Draper is fit, he should be fine.
Yeah, cool. So just onto the outrights. I'm just looking at kind of the big names on here. I honestly think this is about as straightforward as an Indian Wells draw as I've seen. There's obviously bigger names, like you've got Tsitsipas lurking at C2 around in the bottom half. I think the bottom half is slightly more stacked as well, just looking through the seeds. Tsitsipas, Cressy, Dimitrov, Tiafoe, Nori, Berrettini, Shapov, Valov, Rublev. And Kasper Ruud, I think. And then you go to the top half and you've got Davidovich, Fekina, Kachanov, Zverev, Bautista Agut, Van der Zandschulp, Medvedev, Runa, Kecmanovic, Musetti, Sinner, Demonor, Choric, Baez, Fritz, Alger, Aliassim, Zirindolo, Paul. I think I've mixed up this somewhere down the line. But they're the seeds, basically.
Bottom half, I think.
Yeah, I think Medvedev is bottom half. What I was going to say is the whole point of that was that the bottom half of this draw is stacked compared to the top, in my opinion. So I think if you're looking for value picks, the top half's probably where to go. In terms of people who just might make it out of nowhere. I'm actually going to break the rules as well, by the way, because I'm picking two outrights and a wild card this week. I don't care. Sue me. It's my podcast. I'll do what I like.
I'll see you in
and
court.
What I'm going to say, yeah, I'll see you there when I've made, excuse my French, shit tons of money. So I am going to pick Medvedev. He's the odds on favorite, and I think he's the form player. Three back-to-back tournament wins, I believe it is now. And he's back to his best. These conditions suit him to no end. He's got the firepower, the serve to hit outright winners, which other people can't do on this court, sort of court speed. And he's also an incredible retriever, which it plays right into his hands. Medvedev is the man to beat here, I think. And at 9-4, that's not a terrible price. So I'm going to take Medvedev as my, not even each way, I'm just taking him as outright. I'm also going to take Alcaraz as my other outright. Top half, he's got less competition. I think the big names up there are probably Runa, Hercash, who else is up there? Fritz, as I say, Azhar Aliassime. They're probably the only other big names. Sinner, I guess. I think he's the man to beat in the top half as well. And I always think Alcaraz's best surface is a slow hard court, a bit like when he won in Miami. So this is going to be good for him, I think. I think Alcaraz has a great chance. And 13-2 is a very generous price. I'm going to go each way on that one. And then my wild card is obviously top half. I'm taking, and I cannot believe this price. This is the most hideously misplaced price I've ever seen, I think. Hercash 50-1. 50-1. To get out of a half that basically just has Alcaraz, Azhar Aliassime, Fritz, and Sinner elsewhere. Like that's ridiculous. Hercash is great on this kind of court speed and this sort of surface. He friggin' won Miami, didn't he, I think, a couple of years back. So it's, oh my God, like, I will take a unit each way on that. I don't think he wins the event, but I think there's more than a 50-1 chance that he gets out of this half. So we'll take an each way on him there, I think. And on that note, I'll hand over to you for your opinions.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, for me, Medvedev is the favorite at the moment. I think he's playing the best at the moment, particularly with no Djokovic in a draw. I think he wins this event, but for the sake of boring, I'll take someone else as his odds aren't. Well, I found 11-4 actually on Medvedev, which, to be honest, isn't too bad. But yeah, I'm going to go for someone else. I agree, by the way. I thought Hercash at 50-1 was far too long, and I almost went for that for my wild card. So I disagree with you about the draw. I think that the bottom half is much less stacked. I mean, in the top half, you've got obviously Alcaraz, like Hercash, as you said, Tommy Paul, Azhar Aliassime, Fritz, Dimonor, who just won Acapulco, Sinner, and Runa. But I mean, there's a lot of names that I could see coming out of that half, or at least, you know, making the quarters or semis. Whereas bottom half, for me, not as many. I mean, Rude's not in good form. Berrettini had injury worries. Obviously, other names like Rublev played pretty well last week. Zverev finding some form again. Medvedev, obviously, the form player. But my outright Stefanos Tsitsipas at 9-1. He does have Medvedev in his half, but that wouldn't be until the semis. He's had a great start to the year, which we've spoken about, unbeaten in the United Cup, Aussie Open finalist. He's only lost two matches this year, that Aussie Open final to Djokovic, and to Jannik Sinner in Rotterdam, who was in inspired form that week. I think 9-1 is pretty good value, to be fair. I think these slower surfaces do kind of suit him. You know, the two biggest titles of his career, actually, he did win the ATP finals. But apart from that, the two biggest titles of his career have both come in Monte Carlo. He's had good results on the clay. Didn't do well in his swing last year for some reason, but he's played much better this time around. I think given his draw, I think he has a great chance of going deep at 9-1. Then for my wild card, I'm actually going to go for the top half. Some other prices I liked. I'd like Fritz at 22-1, given he's, you know, the defending champion, California native. We know he likes these conditions. And Zverev 33-1. I think, you know, if he can get through those first couple of rounds unscathed, you know, played really well last week, I thought, in Dubai, played well against Murray in Doha. I think he looks to be not quite back to his best, but getting there. So I think he could be a danger this week. I think 33-1 is pretty long for someone who's quality, but I'm not going to take that. I'm going to take Jannik Sinner 10-1. As I said, was unbelievably good in Rotterdam. Outplayed Tsitsipas really. Took a set off Medvedev in a very high quality final. Won Marseille without dropping a set. Pushed Tsitsipas to five sets in the Aussie Open. So yeah, he's had a good start to the year, and with the level that he's been playing at the moment, he can beat anyone in this draw, I'd say. He's made the final of Miami before, so we know he likes these conditions. And I just think there's really not many players out there with his kind of ball striking ability, and also with his ability to kind of take the ball early and just kind of stay on the baseline and not get pushed back. There's really only Djokovic I can think of that does that as well. Well, better than he does. And yeah, he's in the opposite half to Medvedev, which I like. And yeah, I'd make him the favorite to beat most of the people in that half, to be honest. Obviously, Alcaraz would be a very tough match. He has beaten him a few times last year, though, so I wouldn't rule him out of that one. And I think 10-1 is good enough. So, Tsitsipas 9-1 each way, Sinner 10-1 each way, my two picks.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I've kind of gone off Sinner recently, but you are right. He did look good in Rotterdam. So I think a good chance to make some money here, especially if one of these kind of longer odd picks does break through. Anyway, yeah, that's great. So unless there's anything else that you wanted to add and contribute this week, Luke?
Not really. I think we've covered everything.
Yeah, so do I. We'll leave it there then. So that's been the roundup of this week, our predictions for the Indian Wells Masters. We'll stay active on the Twitter this week. I think it's a big event. We'll try and stay well posted for the kind of Masters swing that we have coming up here. And yep, follow our Twitter at Serving Up Clutch and stay posted because we will try and get you some profit this week. Thank you for listening. All the best.
One more thing, if you're still listening, I'll try and get some articles out this fortnight.
We love that. I'm not too busy content right now,
so stay tuned for those on our website, yeah. As Charlie says, servingupclutch.com, and they'll be tweeted out as well on our Twitter at servingupclutch.
Amazing, awesome, thank you for that, Luke, and thanks again for listening. All the best.